Batu is throned on highest bliss to present the Green Dragon Silhouette Dance Troupe of Indonesia, including Betty and her tumbling chihuahuas, in a little thing we've just thrown together entitled Hudwinks, starring Roy Hudd, Chris Emmett, Denise Coffey, David Goodison, and Fred Harris in the major roles, and Danny LaRue, who has a minor Minson part in the second act. This week...
She was only a sausage maker's daughter, but the less said about that, the better. Yes, who said alternative comedy was dead? London, a vibrant, throbbing metropolis of 10 million souls, each with their own searching problem. Where's the vibrant throbbing coming from? Fidel Castro Avenue is typical of the many streets in London suburbia, each side lined with gaily coloured skips and a few quaint old cortinas standing on breeze blocks. Number 44 is the home of a wonderful couple called Samantha Fox. While number 28 houses another wonderful couple called Mr. and Mrs. Smollett, along with their 25-year-old son called Compton, and an incontinent cat called all the names under the sun. Our story begins with Mr. and Mrs. Smollett relaxing quietly on the sofa, waiting for the Keith Harris show to end so they can turn the television on. When all of a sudden...
I wish you wouldn't do that, Dad.
What?
Knock your pipe out on me head. I mean, I've just had me hair crinkled at Mario's. You think it suits me?
Well, it matches your legs, that's about all, isn't it?
It's one of your moods, eh?
Well, it's our Compton mother. It's getting me done. He's 25 years old and he's done nothing with his life. I mean, when I was his age, I had a Duke of Edinburgh as a ward and a life saving certificate. And what's our Compton got? A crackerjack pen and a signed photo of Roland Ratt.
It's a signed photo of Esther Ranson.
You've got your opinions and I've got mine. But the fact still remains. It's time our Compton got some fresh air.
I should think he gets enough fresh air, what with you making him sleep up that tree in the garden every night.
Well, it's time he flew the nest. It's for his own good, Mother. I'm trying to make a man out of him.
Oh, that sounds like our Compton home from work.
Hello, Mum. Hello, Dad. That sound you heard was me coming home from work.
I'll get you tea, Compton.
Compton Smollett, only son and sole heir to the Smollett's rare collection of Victorian gas bills. He made his meagre living as a self-employed train spotter. When he spotted a train, he sold the information to British Rail commuters. Compton had one discernible characteristic. He was as dull as a wet weekend in Whitehaven.
Well, Dad, aren't you going to ask me what kind of a day I've had?
Bog off!
Oh, good, I knew you'd be interested. My incredibly exciting day began when I arrived at the bus stop to await the arrival of the 732 Peckham High Street to Westminster Bridge. Except, of course, on Sundays and bank holidays when the service runs off peak time. But I digress somewhat from the main nub of my narrative.
Yes, and I think we'll digress at this point and give you the answers to last week's competition.
Yes, and the answers to last week's Robert Maxwell quiz are as follows. Answer one, a stable in Bethlehem. Answer two, so poor his parents cut him off without a rabbi. Answer three, ouch.
And if you got all those right, you must be Rupert Murdoch. Now, at the risk of causing a frenzied rush for the exits, we return to the Smollett's domicile.
A.R. Compton, how does that feel?
Well, I must say, Dad, I feel pretty silly standing on a chair with a rope around my neck.
Yeah, well, perhaps you'd be more comfortable if I removed the chair.
Your tea ready, Compton? Dad, what are you doing?
Dad thinks I ought to make an attempt to climb Everest, Mother, so he's teaching me the basics of mountaineering.
Yes, and he's just about to get the hang of it. Ready, Compton?
No, Dad, no. Are you out of your mind? Have you no consideration for my feelings?
What?
You could have put some newspaper on the chair. I mean, look at his shoes.
Stay back, woman, stay back. In our folly, we have created a monster. A monster we must destroy now. or live the rest of our lives wandering aimlessly in apparent limbo of anguish and mental torture.
I thought we were retiring to Hastings St. Leonard.
Same thing, Mother. Come, Jen. Where are you going?
To my room, Father, to prepare for my attempt on Everest. I need to study maps and charts. Orientation and an instinctive sense of direction are essential to a mountaineer.
Compton?
Yes?
That's a broom cupboard, dear. Your room is through the other door, I think.
Oh, I forgot.
Meanwhile, local gossip had forced Compton to stop seeing his schoolgirl sweetheart. He was 25 and she was still in the infants. So he goes along to pick up his new girlfriend, Melissa, at the ethnic mother care factory. Where she works knitting little pink yashmaks for baby Arabs.
Yoo-hoo! Melissa!
Yes, Melissa was the kind of girl men whistle at. That's right, she looked like a sheepdog.
Compton, you're going to what?
I'm going to Mount Everest.
You tell me where she lives and I'll scratch her eyes out.
Compton, too, joined in the applause for this old Jimmy Wheeler joke. And went on to explain his motives.
I must prove to my father that I'm a man, a real man. And I've told him straight, if I fail to conquer Everest, then he can cancel my beano from the newsagent.
Well, don't think you're going without me, Compton.
What?
Oh, I've heard about these Sherpa women, all slant eyes and sleeping bags. I'm coming with you.
Melissa, are you insane? Why, the ambient temperature on the upper ridges is at least 50 below. You'll never withstand it.
Compton, you're talking to someone who once spent a fortnight in Scarborough. Everest is just the same, but not quite as illy.
But don't you realise? Everest is like... It's like Cliff Richard's bedroom. It's no place for a woman.
The argument swung to and fro. First it was Cliff Richard's legal advisers, and then it was ours. But eventually it was decided that Melissa would be an invaluable asset to the expedition. Her natural charm and unique appearance would certainly repulse any wild animals that threatened above. So off they went to equip themselves for the adventure of a lifetime, with Compton driving his Sinclair C5 at full throttle, and Melissa walking steadily along beside him. Meanwhile, here's a gale warning for sailors in the Portsmouth area. If you spent the night with gale, see your doctor immediately.
Sir, madam?
Oh, yes. Two hanks of chain, one portable ratchet pulley, two pairs of hermetically sealed boots, and a large tin of Fiery Jack wintergreen ointment, please.
I see.
Guess what we're going to do.
Can't imagine, but I'll give me right arm to watch.
Together, we're going to scale new heights.
Yeah, you must have a sturdy wardrobe, that's all I can say.
Everest. We're going to conquer Everest.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've been reading too much Barbara Cartland recently. Everest, you say? You've never bought mountaineering equipment before, have you, sir?
How can you tell?
Because this is a greengrocer's shop. Well, you can get what you want down at Millett's, down the street.
Oh, right.
Morning, Squire.
Good morning. We are desirous of purchasing equipment to necessitate the scaling and eventual conquest of Mount Everest.
Well, you mean like boots and things?
That's right. He has a list.
Well, I'm afraid our boots won't cure that.
Oh, a list.
I see. Yeah, well, let's have a look now, then. Let's have a look at here. Yes. Tensile wire cable. Well, I'm afraid we're out of stock, but I can order some from the manufacturers. Hang on. I'll give them a bell. Tensile wire cable.
Gregory's Wireworks.
I'm very pleased for Gregory, but... In fact, for both of you, come to that, but... can you put me through to the trade counter? Right, well, that's it. That's your list complete now. But in my opinion, you're still not sufficiently equipped to cope with the sub-zero temperatures of Everest.
What do you mean?
Well, 12 ounces of Victory V lozenges is just not enough, is it?
All right, we'll take a pound.
No. Look, we're talking cold here, you know. You're going to a place where brass monkeys fear to tread. Brutal, non-yielding terrain, frozen glaciers, impassable ridges.
Look, we've done the Scarborough joke already.
Oh, sorry.
You've climbed the Himalayas, have you?
Well, no, no, not really, but I've trekked in the Pennines.
Hillocks.
It's true, I tell you. Listen, now, what do you think of this idea? Look, I supply all the necessary equipment and expertise if you let me join the expedition.
Everything?
Right down to the last piton. And with my experience, I could be an invaluable member of the team.
Hmm. What do you think, Melissa?
Well, I've no objection to having a spare member along. In fact, the more the merrier, as far as I'm concerned.
All right, then, it's a deal.
Good.
What's a piton, by the way?
Ah, well, it's just something I slipped in to show that the writer's done a few minutes' research on the subject.
Good idea. Right, very well, then.
Hillary. Edwin Hillary.
Very well, Hillary. We leave at dawn.
Dawn saw our determined ménage à trois set off on a journey that would either end in a knighthood or, God forbid, an interview on Wogan. Meanwhile, in a Norwegian corporation slipper bath and ice-cold plunge...
Oh, yippee, yippee, home. I never had a community jacuzzi bubble bath before. Jolly good fun, you know?
It's not a jacuzzi, Olsen. I've been on the Californian radish diet.
Yes, Raoul Almondslice. Norwegian estuary tourist guide and known to his friends as Fjord Escort. Was priming his anatomy to the very zenith of physical vim in preparation.
Stop.
For...
Hold it right there. Now, don't say another word.
Who are you?
Joan Collins' lawyer. And there's obviously a Joan Collins joke coming up here somewhere, so just let me warn you that I'm in the audience and I'm writing everything down.
Ah, you're Bob Monkhouse's lawyer as well, then, are you?
Now, just you watch it, pal. And no Joan Collins jokes, right?
For your information, mate, we can do this show without Joan Collins jokes.
Good. Get on with it, then.
Right. Well, you've been a wonderful audience, ladies and gentlemen. So it's good night for all.
Oi, what's this smack? Are you spailing? Are you some kind of a sugar number life to filter fish bagels?
That's all we need, a Jehovah's Witness.
Oh, witness, witness, I'm the sponsor of this program, and my commercial you haven't even done yet already.
Oh, yes, sir, yes. Cue the commercial.
That'll be £15.48, madam.
Oh, dear, I don't seem to have enough money with me. Oh, Jenny, what shall I do?
Honestly, Susan, you are a scatterbrain. Simply take this Brand X washing powder and this Brand X softener out of your trolley and put them under your coat when no one's looking.
Yes, a Tesco checkout. And that familiar sound of tinned salmon rattling against corset stays. Oh. Now, where was I? Oh, yes. Raoul the Norwegian was priming his anatomy to the very zenith of physical vim in preparation for an attempt on Everest by the most difficult and treacherous route via the Paris Ring Road on a Friday tea time. But little did Raoul know the Smollett expedition had established a lengthy lead. After a grueling trek over three continents...
At last we've arrived in the foothills of the Himalayas. Well, fellow adventurers, That's the initial part of the journey completed.
Yep, I always feel a great sense of achievement after I've got the first leg over. Totally refusing to say the next line, Melissa gazed around at the overpowering steeps where desolation stalks, when suddenly...
Compton! Hillary! Look!
Everest, the queen of mountains, stood before them like a bouncer at a Glasgow discotheque. So wondrously awesome was the sight that for a few humble moments they could do nothing but gaze upward, each observing a kind of respectful silence. No mere mortal could describe accurately their feeling at this moment, except perhaps Charlton Heston.
Oh, my God.
Yes, yes, Charlton Heston's immortal line from almost every movie he's ever made. But the winner is... Brian Tilsley for his portrayal of a large cardboard box in Granada's Coronation Street. Oh,
eventually, it was Melissa who broke the silence.
Gulp.
Gulp. Gosh. The gulping and gushing was interrupted by the appearance of a small, rugged-looking local, whose skin had the unmistakable texture of a haddock filleter's apron.
What?
What's he trying to say?
Do you speak English?
I obviously don't understand us.
Well, let me try. I know a little Tibetan.
Ah, which one? We are all little.
Oi. Rot yo rot.
What?
Rot yo rot.
You are the shepherd.
Oh, I see.
What does he want?
He wants to know where the post office is.
No, you idiot. A shepherd.
Oh, shepherd.
Carry equipment, cook food, wash dishes, and babysit weekends.
Well. A Chinese Mark Phillips, eh?
No climb Everest without Sherpa. Oh, death wait for you on every ridge and crevasse. You need Sherpa.
The Sherpa's offer made sense, but only to Professor Stanley Unwin. And so the climb got underway. The Sherpa acting as vanguard, followed by Compton, then Melissa, then Hillary, and finally the entire BBC Northern Philharmonic. Onwards and upwards, they pushed. Why they took a Honda Accord with them is anybody's guess.
You all right behind me, Hillary?
Yeah, fine, Melissa, just fine.
What's your opinion of the fantastic view?
I'd say they were St. Michael, am I right?
No talking back there, quiet. Listen.
My God, Sherpa. I can hear an ominous rumbling. Is it an avalanche?
No. It's time for my tea. I'm starving. Hey, we make camp on that rough buttress up there. You help me up first, and then I pull you up on rope.
Oh, good idea. Right. Be ready, then.
Be careful, Sherpa.
You're right. Now then.
Go on.
A little more. That's it. You made it.
There he is, he's
up. Now you pull us up, Sherpa. Sherpa. Sherpa, what are you doing?
Come on, pull us up.
I'm not a Sherpa.
What?
See? I'm Raoul Almondslice, Norwegian climber and master of disguise.
Disguise? You look so convincing as a Sherpa.
I know. It's amazing what you can do with a donkey jacket and a Yoko Ono mask.
He's got a knife.
He's cutting the rope.
Look out. Ow!
And whilst our friends are falling to their inevitable and grisly deaths, I understand there's some exciting golf news from St. Andrews in the Prince Charles Bruce Forsyth Classic. Yes, the Royal and the Ancient.
Yes, sir, you join us after a disastrously embarrassing round for Britain's Reg Guilfoyle, who dropped one at the 8th and then got a bogey at the 14th, which was still on his nose at the final hole. Hey, what a disgusting player he is. Now back to you on the Himalayas.
Where are we?
We seem to have crashed through the ice and landed in some kind of snow cavern.
Look at those huge stalagmites. I'm glad I didn't land on one of those.
Yeah, that'd make your eyes water, wouldn't it? Here, where's Compton?
I'm over here drying my eyes.
Oh, you hurt.
All right, I'll have a look at him. Here, Come here, let's have a look at you.
Well?
I'm sorry to have to tell you this, Compton, but you'll never ride a bicycle again.
What?
Look at those enormous footprints.
My God, what kind of a creature made those?
And more to the point, what's a Millwall supporter doing in the Himalayas?
The tracks go that way. Let's follow them. There may be a way out. Come on.
All right, over here.
Hello. They lead straight to this spiral staircase hewn out of the solid rock. You know what this means?
It means that whatever creature lives in this cave decided to modernise instead of move.
Compton, Hillary, there's something coming down.
You mean?
Yes, the elastic must have snapped during the fall.
Hello there.
What the...
Oh, no!
From the eerie darkness of the ascending staircase stepped forward a creature so huge and hairy you could drive a car through his legs and get a wash, a wax and a blow dry. Dispelling their initial alarm with a sociable wave of his loincloth, the creature bade them sit and began to speak. The trio were spellbound as he unfurled his curious tail. It was 8 feet long and hung down between his legs. Then he invited them to dine, and over a meal of hot stew washed down with a carafe of melted snow, or Castlemaine 4X as it's known over here, they related their story.
Oh, what an absolute scoundrel. But take my word for it, you won't be having any more trouble with the Norwegian.
Why not?
You've just eaten him. Who won the boat race, by the way? Was it Oxford?
What was that you said?
Who won the boat race?
No, that first bit about the Norwegian.
Oh, that. Yes, you've just eaten him. You know, I've always wanted to cox the Oxford 8. I love rowing and...
Eaten him?
What? Well, no, not all of him, just a selection of the tastier bits.
You mean the liver I ate was...
And those kidneys I had were...
Melissa, what is it?
I had the sausage and dumplings.
You swine! You turned us into cannibals.
Come on, old fellow. I mean, you've got to eat what you can round these parts. I mean, Everest isn't exactly abounding with restaurants, now, is it?
Now, that's a lie. There's a happy eater on the South Glacier.
I rest my case. Now, look, why don't you all get some sleep, and in the morning I'll guide you to the summit, take a few pictures for your album, and then you can return to Blighty for a hero's welcome.
Over here, dearest star, can you get on his shoulders, Melissa?
Sheffield Telegraph. Melissa, can we have one of you switching on Compton's stomach pump?
Okay.
Hillary, is there any truth in the rumour that you actually ate a Norwegian?
Absolute nonsense. And if I ever catch the person who accused me of being a cannibal, I'll bite his head off.
I wish you wouldn't do that, Dad.
What?
Poke the fire with my leg. These slippers are brand new. Oh, that sounds like our Compton home from Everest.
Hello, Mum. Hello, Dad. That sound you heard was me coming home from Everest.
Compton, come in, my son. Come in.
I'll get you tea, Compton.
You make me a proud father, son. Oh. At last, oh. You're a real man. Come on. Rambo, sit down and let's have a man-to-man, blood and guts chat about your adventure, eh?
Not now, Father, I'm sorry, but there's something much more important I have to do.
What's that, son?
Now, there's a cue for an ending, if ever I heard one.
I want to read my Beano. Has it come yet?
Starring Roy Hart as Paul Newman, Chris Emmett, Denise Coffey, Fred Harris, and David Goodison as Roy Hattersley. Danny couldn't make it, and the show was written by a man who only came in to use the loo.
And the similarity between the Yeti and our producer, Jonathan James Moore, was purely coincidental. Ta-da!